Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun that relates to you having a happier, healthier relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us. You know what? Our listenership is over 650,000 people. We have another 414,000 people that are listening to us on internet and streaming. I just want to thank you for sharing us with your friends and family. I do want to say we have one very special show today. It is about the ins and outs of money. Later in the show, we're going to have Emily Blaine, but you know, I just want to preface it by saying this. Most engaged couples, you got to have that financial discussion, but aren't exactly comfortable with turning to each other while Netflix is playing and say, hey, honey, can you tell me about your debt? Well, Emily's going to tell us, a financial coach who's going to help us engage couples to talk about money. And whether you're married, just about to get married, been married for a month or two, or been married for years, if you're trying to figure out how these have these conversations, you're going to want to stick around for Emily. Now, today we're seeing it in the news. People are worried about inflation. You have the administration saying, hey, it's only short-lived. We're going to talk a little bit about what you can do to position your retirement to deal with inflation. In fact, you should be doing something because inflation is very real and it happens at 3.1%. But now I'm very, very happy. We have Patrick Geddes. I just want to say this. For many people who feel they lack the knowledge to handle their own investment portfolios, they turn to an investment expert or an investment advisor to help guide them to make decisions. While the advice that we receive may be sound and be given with good intentions, many industry pros have often self-serving biases when they come and sit with you at that table. While investment managers generally want to do the right thing by their clients, this does not necessarily stop them from unconsciously steering their clients in the wrong direction that is beneficial to them. And we have Patrick Geddes. He's going to provide us advice on how to vet investment experts, advisors, and reveal the motivations of investment professionals. Now, let me talk to you a little bit about Patrick. Patrick's the co-founder and former CEO of Aperio Group, a $44 billion investment manager that works primarily with high net worth individuals and institutional advisors. Prior to that, Patrick was the research director and chief financial officer at the financial service firm Morningstar. He also taught graduate level portfolio theory at UC Berkeley Extension. He's also the author of the upcoming book, Transparent Investing, which teaches you how to rewrite your brain, unlearn what you know about investing to help you create a brighter financial future. So, Patrick, welcome to the show. I'm just excited to have you. Probably went into too much of an introduction, but hey, that's okay.
No, it was great. It's an honor to be here. And you captured my points really well. So I'm probably not necessary to even talk any further.
You know what? I always like to ask people, what brought you to write the book, Transparent Investing?
Anyone who's worked with me knows I have a particular touchy hotspot around what I consider dishonest selling. It's just, it's always bothered me. In fact, the reason I co-founded Aperio Group in 1999 was because I didn't want to ever have to lie to anybody. Our firm happened to do well. We just got sold. I thought, you know, I kind of owe it back to the actual investors that ended up helping me so much by giving a kind of an inside line and how to read the industry and how to avoid the traps while still taking advantage of the great things that financial advisors can offer.
I'd like to address the bias and motivation of investment professionals. I think people need to understand that context so they can get a better understanding of what's going on.
Sure. You captured it really well by talking about the incentive problem. As you know, there's a whole field called behavioral finance that focuses mainly on investors. And actually, the whole first part of my book is about that, how as investors, how our brains are wired to lead to poor decisions. But there's also a piece on how investment professionals are also basically hardwired through evolution to pretend to themselves that they don't have any self-interest. And the investment advice world is so fraught with conflict of interest. So the biggest one is that advisors who, as you say, are generally trying to do the right thing by their clients. They really are. They care about their clients. But the problem is the kind of advice you get just is so heavily skewed toward what enriches them. And I think they tend to be afraid of being really upfront and honest with where they can and can't add value.
Everybody creates habits, and those habits are hardwired into them from our parents and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
You understand, oh my God, I'm doing this.
Yep.
Then you can actually make a change. And that's what I'd love to hear about, how people are hardwired that way.
Sure. Although the one point I might disagree with you is all you have to do is know your biases to make the change. It doesn't work that way. It's kind of like saying, I know I'm eating an unhealthy diet and I'd be a lot healthier if I ate really good food. Oh, that's all I have to do is realize that doesn't quite work that way. It's hard for all of us. There are a whole slew of what are called these documented biases in our brains. The place where I really focus, because I think it makes the biggest difference, they're two very, very similar. I kind of lump them together. One is called the illusion of control. And that's where we lie to ourselves and think we actually control outcomes that are, in fact, more random. And that's very natural. Humans have been, you know, imputing great powers to ourselves over weather, over lunar eclipses going back thousands and thousands of years. So that's nothing new. Where it gets us in trouble with investing, though, is where we think, I'm pretty savvy. I know where things are going. Say the comment you just made about inflation, which I agree is a big issue right now. I think I'm going to make a certain bet because I know how to incorporate that knowledge into making better investments. And the problem is that the data are pretty clear cut that we're just not very good at that. The other piece, which is, as you'll see, very closely overlapping, it's called overconfidence. Basically, people, we all score our abilities in investing higher than we actually perform. Kind of like, remember the old Lake Wobegon, the radio show, where all the children are above average. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the problem. You ask any investor, how good are you at picking things? And we will tend to think we're pretty good when in fact the data show all of us, investment professionals as well, are actually not very good at predicting.
Okay. And it's basically a lot of people are making decisions. And the reality is they just don't know what they don't know. And what they don't know is the thing that causes the problem.
Exactly. So ironically, you could argue it's a kind of humility is what makes you wealthier. And that just sounds backwards. Like, what do you mean? It's really being really savvy and on top of market moves. Nope. You made the reference to, you know, we all have habits and behaviors. One of the things I think people find shocking is when I explain through the research that actually good behavior is what makes a really good investor, not clever analytics, brilliant insight. It's the things like, there's a great analysis I just read on Warren Buffett and how incredibly wealthy he is. And I forget the exact number, something like over 95% of that was accumulated after he turned 65 years of age. In other words, it's all about compounding. He is a brilliant investor. He really does extraordinary things, but it's also, he just let it ride. And that is a critical piece. That doesn't sound as kind of cool, fun, insightful, and sexy as making a killing, but the real trick is sticking with whatever your plan is, as boring as that sounds.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that. If you think about the compound effect over a 10-year period,
exactly.
You know, that one little habit of doing it every single day,
yep.
Nobody sees it for 12, you know, for five years, then on the sixth year, they start seeing it, and then it amplifies itself. And it grows and grows. We see that all the time with people. That's why people think, you know, hey, this person just made it out of nothing. And the reality, you didn't see anything for 10 years. And all of a sudden, all that hard work just brought them into the public. I think that's a great quote. People have been doing it for a long time and they've been doing it consistently, but they're humble about it. And even when you hear Warren Buffett talk, it's humble.
Yeah. And the comment you made is also very applicable of, you don't even look at it for 5 or 10 years. That is another really good habit in investing that sounds completely counterintuitive.
That's so hard.
Do not look at your portfolio often. Bill Sharpe, the Nobel laureate in economics who invented the capital asset pricing model, one of the biggest breakthroughs in investment theory about almost 50 years ago. My co-founder, Perry, once asked him, how often should people look at their portfolios? And his first answer was, every 5 years. And he said, no, I can't say that. That'll just sound crazy. How about every 3 years? It's so counterintuitive because we think this is back to the illusion of control. I have to stay on top of this. And actually, ironically, the best advice is don't stay on top of it. Put your focus and energy elsewhere. And that's incredibly hard to do because anxiety about money is very real. I'm not saying anything like, oh, don't worry, the stock market goes up and down. And if you've lost 45% of your your net worth because the stock market went down, just get over it. Like, that's a really, really hard thing to go through. But the math is very, very clear that the people who do the best are the ones who ride it through, who can tolerate the up and down. I like to describe it as the market pays you for the strength of your stomach lining. And the more you can endure that, the better off you're going to be. And what's the secret? Is it very clever statistical analysis, all the stuff I'm trained in? It's patience and discipline just to ride it through. Basically, don't do anything until you need the money.
That's a wonderful statement, but it's so, so very hard to do. And I'm going to make this point, and then we're going to go to a break. The point is you take a look at all the talking heads on TV, all the financial stuff, all the trading stuff.
The financial pornography, we call that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, financial pornography. I agree with you on that because, quite frankly, from their perspective, it's a blood sport. It's, hey, I need people to watch so I can sell ads. And I need these big personalities and all that stuff. And they talk about, oh, so-and-so said this and so-and-so said that. Yep. And you hear some people who follow this stuff and you find out they didn't do very well if you followed that, you know? And so it's just really interesting. So look, this segment is brought to us by Scoremaster.com. Did you know the average American has 97 points they can add to their credit score, but have no idea on how to get them? The data scientists at Scoremaster crack the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approval, huge discounts, low interest rates on everything from buying, refinancing a home, to leasing a new car, to applying for a credit card. How fast is Scoremaster? One member raised their credit score 33 points in just 5 days, 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy. It takes about a minute to get started. If you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right, Scoremaster for free, and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. So go to scoremaster.com/savings. That's scoremaster.com/savings. Again, that's scoremaster.com/savings. Stick with us. We're going to be right back with more Patrick Gentz.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. I want to truly thank you for tuning in and appreciating you letting your friends, family, and associates know about the show. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information, insights on Saving with Steve, then I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel or Spotify channel. That way you'll never miss a show. I'd like to say thank you to our affiliates, UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Network. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of financial and personal freedom. We have Patrick Gentz here, and we've been talking about investing and some really insightful information on what you should be thinking about, what questions you should be asking, things like that. One of the things I wanted to ask you, the perils of hidden investment costs. Could you speak to that, Patrick? Because a lot of people just don't quite get it because fees, taxes are second to market corrections in affecting your portfolio. Help us understand the perils of hidden investment costs.
So there are lots of ways that advisors can get paid, investment advisors, asset managers, wealth managers. The challenge is that a lot of those fees are not all that easy to understand or follow. For example, bid-ask spreads, when you're buying something and the commission can say free, but free, I would argue, is actually a rather dangerous word in investing because That's often the most expensive type. The other area where fees can be hard to track and therefore good for the investment industry and bad for you as a consumer, the 401k world is one of the worst, where there are some very, very expensive plans out there. There are also some wonderful, very low-cost ones. And it gets tricky when some employers end up putting all the administrative burden on their employees, what are called plan participants, by offering only very, very expensive investments. And the problem is, like, if you have a mutual fund with a really high expense ratio, you don't think about that as you're paying a fee. So for example, if you had to write a check to an advisor for $5,000, you might think that really hurts. That feels really uncomfortable. But let's say the same advisor is charging a percentage of your portfolio and they're getting $15,000 a year. You never see it. It's kind of accrued behind the scenes. You don't really pay attention to it psychologically. So the point I try to make with fees is it can be a little complicated to learn. It's one of the best areas if you're going to educate yourself. Instead of educating yourself on how to beat the market or time the market, actually look at the fee side. And it's tough to figure it out sometimes, but incredibly beneficial to you as an investor, because back to that illusion of control, fees, that's an area you really do control as an investor.
You know what? I was thinking back while you were saying that to a study that was done a few years, and I forget who did the study, and it was directed towards the 401k market. It said that if you're paying 1% in fees and you're contributing to a 401k over 30 years, on average, that equates to about $140,000 over your lifetime. I thought to myself, geez, I can do a whole heck of a lot more with that. So yep. I better pay attention to that.
Yep.
And I think everybody listening should be paying attention to that and know those things to make sure they know exactly what they're paying for. Because every percent you can drop that means more money in your pocket. That creates a higher return.
Exactly. But it's part of why that's harder to do. You made a great comment before the break when you were talking about, that's the fascinating thing about investing, is it's actually, the right answer is simple, but it's not easy, because you gotta kind of have to unlearn. And similarly with the fees, it's really drilling down to what you're paying can unfortunately be quite a challenge.
I don't disagree with that one. I saw one of the talking points, and I just want to bring this out. It said gender differences and biases in investing. That's really interesting to me. So help us understand that.
Sure. There's some not incredibly widespread. We're talking multiple articles. The title one is my favorite. It's called Boys Will Be Boys. And basically what researchers have found is women are slightly better investors than men. Now, you might think, well, that's probably because women are smarter or can see a broader picture. It gets back to that overconfidence issue. So the fact is, women are fairly bad at predicting financial outcomes. Well, that's better than men. Men are equally bad at making predictions. But unlike women, this is all, of course, all on average. Unlike women, men tend a little more to think we know what's going on when in fact we don't. So no one is really good at predicting. But the men, we get ourselves in trouble when we think, come on, I'm a guy, I know how to do this. And again, it's the natural inclination to think, you know, you're smarter than the average bear, to quote Yogi. And it's very interesting kind of behavioral discovery in the research, again, reinforcing how dangerous overconfidence is, whatever your gender. Because I've heard plenty of women who are overconfident and think they can do better. But back to you, you made the comment, you know, we don't know what we don't know. And I think women are a little clearer. I don't know what's going to happen. You're absolutely right. But why do you want to pay a lot of money to someone who also doesn't know what's going to happen? That's kind of my angle on that ability to predict the future.
I was just going to say ego versus humility.
So exactly.
It goes back to the same thing. Okay. What type of questions should people be asking? Because one of the other talking points that I have is doing it yourself versus hiring a professional.
Yeah. That one's, I think, interesting. I've not seen good advice on that, because the advice on whether you should do it yourself or hire a professional tends to come from two extreme sources: the industry, and what do you think they're going to say?
Mm-hmm.
Of course you should hire us. Don't ever try this at home. Or a kind of cynical, the investment world is all snake oil salespeople and you should stay away. That's an extremely naive and actually unhelpful comment or framework. So how should an investor approach that decision? It's going to boil down to looking at the services you're expecting from your financial advisor. It's one of the things I really emphasize in the book, is this crystal ball ability, that's the thing industry is not very good at, foretelling the future in two big ways. What's called market timing. Oh, you want to be in the market out. Very bad track record on doing that. The second is, okay, in, say, the stock market, I want to outperform the stock market. So I want to be what's called active management. I want to pick the stocks that are going to do better. Those are not good value-added services. But then there are a lot that do add value. Financial planning, the kind of counseling of talking people off the ledge. When you're in a market meltdown, people want to do something, even though doing nothing may often be the best. And advisors can be very good, very effective, add a lot of value and save people money by keeping us as investors from being our own worst enemies. Mm-hmm. So when you're deciding whether or not to do it yourself, look at what you need. Oh, I need some complicated financial planning and I got some messy trusts or whatever. That's going to tend to lead you more toward hiring someone as opposed to, I don't need anything fancy. I just want a portfolio. Should I hire someone to do that? That would tend to lean you more toward, you can do it yourself as long as you're very disciplined and don't sell out. The one thing you do have to pick is what people call your asset allocation. I boil that to keep it down to really simple terms to how much do you have in the risky bucket and how much do you have in the safer bucket. The risky bucket being stocks, real estate, if you want to get really fancy, other real assets, commodities, hedge funds. Then the safer, of course, would be cash and bonds. And bonds have some risk, but they're generally a lot safer. And that balance between the two of those, that's the biggest, most important call. And basically, once you've picked that, it's really easy to just have a couple of index funds or very low-cost bond funds and let it sit. You don't have to tweak. In fact, you shouldn't, and don't get into the weeds. So if that sounds kind of like, hey, I could do that. That's not that hard. You probably can if you're thinking, I don't want to. And I have all these other sort of, I need education. I need some advice on complicated tax things. That would be more toward hiring advisors. One of the things that'll be on my website within a couple months, basically like kind of a questionnaire you can take. Should I hire someone or should I do it myself? So you can actually go through all that and kind of score where you are as an investor in terms of whether you should probably hire someone or you can give it a try yourself. And remember, there are advantages and disadvantages to each, and you got to keep that in mind.
Hey, Patrick, great segue. I want to thank you for being here. The information you provided is just outstanding, and I hope everybody took it in because I'm taking notes here, not just talking to you. You talked about your website. You have this book coming out, I believe it's January 2022, called Transparent
Correct.
Investing.
Correct.
Okay. Give us a little plug about the book. Where can people go to get on an email list to let them know when the book comes out? Special little notices and all that.
Yeah. So the website is patrickgeddes.co. That's Patrick Geddes, G-E-D-D-E-S.co. Right now, it's not really up, but it does have a place where you can put your email. And so the book, as you mentioned, coming out in January, is really about a lot of what we've been talking about, this combination of how's my brain wired? How does that make me better or worse investor? How does the industry fit in with a real consumer advocacy? And then finally, the third part is, okay, what do I do? How do I actually decide? And combining all that stuff together to hopefully make it a lot less intimidating. The book's really intended for people who are intimidated by the investment industry. And I'm hoping it's a way to kind of defang that and make it a lot more understandable.
Well, that's perfect because that's going to be like 80, 90% of our audience. So again, Patrick, I want to thank you for coming onto the show, sharing your wisdom and experience with us. Hopefully we can have you come back after the book goes out because we'd love to have you back there and share more of your wisdom. Again, I want to thank you for being here and you have a great day and stay safe.
Great. Thanks very much. I'd love to come back and really enjoy this. Bye-bye.
That was Patrick Geddes. Wasn't that wonderful? He gave us the ins and outs, the questions and the things you need to think about when you're looking to hire a financial advisor. I think that was just wonderful. Stick with us. We're going to be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Welcome back. Patrick Geddes was wonderful. You want to go to his website. You want to check out that book, Transparent Investing. It'll really open up your eyes. And I'm very thankful he was on the show to share his wisdom with us. Now, let's just talk a little bit about inflation. We've been hearing the Fed chairman. We've been hearing Mrs. Zeller, the former Fed chairman as well, talking about inflation. We've heard the White House. Some of them say, hey, it's going to be here for another year or so because we got to get the supply chain going because now we're coming back from the pandemic. Others think, hey, it's going to be a little bit longer. And they consider it's going to be a little bit longer because of all the money that's been put into the economy. They think inflation's going to push that thing forward. So the question is, how do you position your retirement? Think about this. You've likely been saving for 20, 30 years to look forward to your retirement. But the most amount of your dollars buys in the first year of retirement, over the next years, it will shrink due to inflation. The annual inflation rate is about 3.1, and it's been like that for almost 100 years. Now, there's a lot of variances because if you go back to the late 70s, early 80s, you saw 15, 16, 17% unemployment during the Carter era. In fact, they had to create a way to slow down that inflation and stall the economy. Now, beating inflation requires a return on investments of at least 4 to 6% per year, in addition to whatever income is generated or saved. Now, I've got some strategies for you. You might want to consider to adopting to ensure that you're keeping up with inflation, whether it's 4%, 3%, 6%, or whatever the case may be. First of all, think about considering delaying claiming your Social Security. If you're in good health and you don't currently need the cash flow, holding off on claiming Social Security is a smart strategy to mitigate the impact of inflation. Now, today, full retirement age for retirees is either 66, or if you're born past 1960, it's 67. One can claim Social Security as early as age 62, but you have to understand something. You're not going to get as much as what you're supposed to get at full retirement age, which is 66 or 67, and it gets reduced by as much as 30%. If you wait, let's say you're at full retirement age, for every year you wait past the age of 66, or if you're full retirement age to 67, you'll see your Social Security payment increase by 8% per year, and it's called delayed retirement credits, okay? Now, on top of that, Social Security has added a benefit called a cost of living adjustment, which has an average 1.5% growth rate over the last 10 years. Might not be enough to keep up with inflation, but there's not many forms of guaranteed income other than your pension. You know what? It helps with the adjustment and cost of living. Now, on this note, it's very important that you sit down with a financial advisor to determine when is the best time to take your Social Security. You want to make sure it accommodates your situation. So if your situation, you're divorced, you're widowed, you're separated, okay? You have a large age difference. What if one of you passes away? If you take it early, how will it affect when you're older? If you wait past the age of 66 and you're withdrawing your funds, how will that affect you when you're older? There's a lot of pictures and a lot of things you need to look at to make sure you select Social Security properly. So make sure you're talking to a financial advisor. Next thing, purchase items that you'll need in retirement today. This might not be possible for everything you need in retirement, but a practical strategy for some projects or goods you want to buy. If you're planning to do construction on your home when you retire to accommodate your lifestyle change, such as building a master suite on the bottom floor and all that kind of good stuff, you might want to do it now because waiting several years, you could actually retire may result in a significant increase of cost in the renovation due to high inflation. If you're looking to downsize, considering it doing sooner rather than later before housing prices go up. The same strategy can be applied to leisure items you anticipate using frequently in retirement. This could be golf clubs, a boat, RV, purchasing new skis, or even a hot tub. The big thing here is this: it's impossible to predict what products will experience higher inflation.
But by planning ahead, getting what you need today, you could have fewer inflationary concerns to worry about in retirement. Now, positioning your portfolio to withstand inflation pressures. If you don't want to outlive your funds, it's imperative to structure your portfolio to outpace inflation. We've heard this throughout the industry, but if you don't know, inflation, investing in real estate. You can invest in real estate through buying a property and renting it out, or through it through publicly traded real estate investment trusts or Delaware Statutory Trust allows you to buy a portion of a commercial building like a Home Depot or a Lowe's and receive a great interest. They serve as good protection against inflation. Owners of real estate will receive income payments through rents, leases that are often higher than a bond yield. Owners also have the potential to increase rents over time, and the properties themselves may also appreciate as well. The characteristics make it a natural cushion against inflation. Physical access to some extent may also benefit your portfolio. Now, having a broad basket of commodities could also help. And in some amount, you know, possibly precious metals. Both tend to be good safe havens for inflation. Now, if you're looking for something a little safer, there's Treasury Inflation Protected Security called TIPS. Now, the rates might not be too high, but TIPS increase in value in order to keep up with inflation. The value of the bonds are linked to Consumer Price Index, and their principal amounts resets according to the change in the index. If the consumer price sits and continues to rise over and above and outpace inflation, so will your investment in the TIPS. It may be worth considering an allocation to TIPS as part of your investment grade fixed income allocation. Now, annuities can also offer inflation protecting depending upon the type. Annuity is basically a retirement insurance. You pay a premium. At the end of a certain period, you get a fixed monthly payment. Fixed annuities generally have the big win here. Why? The combination of lower or no fees, the security it comes with not having to worry about the value or going up or down, make it better for both people. Now, there's also variable annuities that offer higher rates of return if the market does well, and you can contribute it to retirement, but you have to understand they typically have higher fees. And as Patrick was talking about, that might not make sense. On top of that, they're very, very complex. Now, one of the clear losers during high inflation is simply the U.S. economy. I remember back in the early 70s during inflation, my dad's company basically said, hey, we're going to be laying a whole bunch of people off. And my mom came to us and said, hey, look, dad might get laid off, so we're going to cut back on stuff. So here's the thing. The Fed had manufactured a recession to stifle rampant inflation in the 70s due to the Carter era. Higher inflation can also choke innovation, make it harder for companies to find the funds for new investments and projects, as well as hiring people. So many Americans know the drill during a recession. It's important to prioritize and build up an emergency fund. Bouts of high inflation are generally a bad time to park cushions of cash and savings. So that means if you have a whole bunch of money right now sitting in a savings account that's earning 1%, you've got to understand something. It means you're losing money safely because after taxes and inflation, you probably have less than the balance you put in there at the end of the year. So you want to start looking for better rate return. One of the strategies that's the least popular is working longer, but it's also the most effective. For those folks who are still able to work, there's nothing that will serve as a better hedge against inflation. Working longer in your current job or consulting part-time will allow the soon-to-be retiree, which could be you, to delay spending down their nest egg. Instead, they can use the income from employment to continue to maintain their lifestyle. The security requires one savings for a shorter period of time. So think about this. Instead of retiring at 65, you continue to work or do consulting for 5 years. That's 5 years you don't have to dip into your retirement. So if you had a $2 million portfolio that was just earning 4%, that's an additional $430,000 when you're 70. That could help you out with inflation, okay? I know not everybody can continue to work because of health, family, and other reasons, but this is the closest to a silver bullet. The bottom line, there's several strategies for managing inflation in retirement. Most likely a combination of some of the strategies that I talked about will ensure that the purchasing power is protected and savings isn't drawn down too fast. This segment is brought to you by ScoreMaster. Did you know the average American has 97 points they can add to their credit score, but no idea how to get them? The data scientists at ScoreMaster have cracked the code on how. You know what? Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approvals, huge discounts, lower interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car to applying for a credit card. How fast is ScoreMaster? One member raised their credit score by 33 points in just 5 days. Another 43 points in 2 weeks. ScoreMaster is so easy. It takes about a minute to get started. And if you hurry, you can get to try ScoreMaster for free. That's right. Try ScoreMaster for free and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to ScoreMaster.com/savings. That's ScoreMaster.com/savings. Again, that's ScoreMaster.com/savings. We're going to go to a quick break here. Stick with us. We're going to be right back for Emily Blaine.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Steve Sexton, and this is the Saving with Steve show where we talk about the ins and outs of money. We have a very special guest with us today, but I'd like to just start talking about this. You're about to get married, or you just got married, or you've been married for a year, or maybe you've been married for 50 years, okay? Most engaged couples know, hey, we should probably discuss those finances, but don't exactly feel comfortable turning to each other while watching Netflix and say, hey, honey, can you tell me about that debt? No, I love that. But that's the reality of it. Most people don't know how to engage in that conversation. But what we have financial coach Emily Blaine. She helps engaged couples talk about money. We're so thankful she's here. I know you're going to listen to this and you're just going to have that light bulb go on and go, oh my God, Emily, welcome to the show. I'm thankful you're here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I always like to find out, how did you become a financial coach for engaged couples?
It's been an interesting journey. I majored in music education, which obviously has pretty much nothing to do with financial coaching, but I've always been really passionate with the music education as well, working with students one-on-one. I was never super into I enjoyed my student teaching and being in the classroom, but I really love being able to really focus what I talk about to what each individual needs, saying, oh, you need that, you need that. So since I can focus on you, we can really dig into that where this might not be relevant. So that individual aspect has followed through to the financial coaching. And I've always been passionate about personal finance. My dad has been in finance, the money head of a company, that kind of thing. He's owned a couple small businesses, all of that. And he raised my sister and me and my mother as well, had a big influence on being responsible with our money and, saving and spending, but also saving and saving more and all of that good stuff. And then when my husband and I got married, I sort of became the CFO of our family to manage all of our money and have seen the impact that we've had and seen news story after news story and friend after friend posting about, oh, financial this, this is a struggle, and been able to sort of see that contrast of, wow, I really lucked out in how I was raised and having that good influence to be on top of all of this. And a lot of people don't have that. How can I help impact other people into saying, it's not too late. You can kind of figure out all of this money stuff now, even though maybe your parents weren't comfortable talking about it growing up, or maybe they weren't very good with money growing up. And you probably didn't get that out of school because only 26 states, I think, require a personal finance class in high school. Mm-hmm. So most people graduate and are like, okay, now how do I adult with money? So I took a class at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and have taken a couple financial coaching courses, and here I am.
It's really interesting when you talk about you're one of the lucky ones that you had a father that kind of taught you
absolutely
the right habits. And because the reality is, I look at a term called the compound effect, and you do those things mm-hmm. every single day. And then one day you wake up and you have a lot of money and you can do the things you want and you have the financial freedom. And it's just not, I want to say one day, but what a lot of people don't realize is what you do in the dark comes to the light. It might not come today, tomorrow, 5 or 10 years from now, but you know, when it's time to say, hey, can we do this? You're like, hey, I'm in a good spot. While others are going, mm-hmm. oh my God, what do I do? So I think yeah. that's wonderful. I also read a study that indicated that, you know, most financial habits for kids are set by the age of 7 because of what their parents do.
Yep.
And I think, again, you're very lucky for that. And most of my financial stuff had to be learned later in life, probably because we were a family of 5 and my dad was working all the time, but you know, that's the way it goes. Yeah. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about our parenting relationships with each other and money and how it can affect our relationships, especially when we're moving into a marriage or even have a marriage and or a relationship where you're cohabitating or whatever. So there's a lot of dynamics there. You know what? I've been married for a very long time and I understand a lot of those dynamics. And what was really interesting about your story is you were your family's CFO. In my story, I'm my family's CFO because mm-hmm. it took a long time for my wife to actually want to be really involved with it, and which was interesting because it's her mom is her family CFO.
Yep. So
it's like, and then on my side of it, it was my dad because my mm-hmm. mom took care of 5 kids.
Yeah.
So let's have that discussion because I think people need to realize where I'm going to say their genetics come from a financial world.
A lot of people, not just about money, but about their ideas about marriage in general, come from what they see from their parents, whether that's a positive thing of, wow, my parents are so in love and manage their money so well, this is perfect. So that's exactly what I need to do. And then I will be happy and so in love with my partner and all of that, which may or may not be true. Or, wow, my parents fought all the time or fought all the time and then got divorced, or I didn't know one parent. And so these are the things that I need to do to not emulate that. And as long as I don't do those things, then I'll be fine, which again, may or may not be true. But a lot of the times we don't necessarily realize how deeply ingrained some of those assumptions and expectations are. My husband and I got married right out of college. Both of our parents are still married, had combined finances. So we just assumed that, of course, combining finances is the right thing to do, which mm-hmm. for us has worked out great. But for a lot of other people, that may not be the right step. They may go into it assuming, well, my parents combine their finances, therefore we have to combine our finances. When in reality, maybe there are some reasons not to. Maybe what you or your partner have had a history in the past with a different partner who you had combined finances and that didn't work out so well because your previous partner had really bad spending habits or something and got you into a lot of debt that way. Mm-hmm. Or maybe for other reasons, you just want a little more independent. And so having joint accounts for some things, but individual accounts for other things is better. Or maybe people grew up with parents who had completely separate finances. And so they assume that completely separate finances is the right way to go. Or, wow, mom and dad fought about money all the time growing up. So if we keep our money completely separate, then we won't fight about money, which again, may or may not be the case. So it's all about identifying what you saw growing up, thinking about what did I see growing up and what can I take away from that that does or does not apply to my situation now with this partner that I'm with.
It's real interesting. You also see people who have, what is it called? I want to say not a positive financial experience with their parents where they're in and out of debt, had to move a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. Mom and or both had spending habits. They're still together. They're happy, but they just don't know how to handle the money.
Yeah.
And you have kids that say, I don't ever want to do that, but I don't know how.
Right.
So how do people go about creating that dynamic, that conversation? obviously you don't want to do it in the middle of a Netflix commercial.
Right.
You know, Breaking Bad's the wrong time.
maybe.
So help our listeners. I think the things that you're talking about and these issues, it doesn't matter if you're about to get married or married, it's still there. And some people never really learn how to deal with it. And that's one of the reasons why they probably fight all the time. But could you help us give the foundation for that conversation? What type of process do you take people through?
Obviously, if a couple's coming to me and we're working together, they're expecting to have the conversation. So then it's pretty easy. I mean, the door has already been opened. All right. Yep. You're coming to talk to a financial counselor. So yeah, we're going to talk about financial things. That's pretty easy. If you are not working with a financial coach, or you're just sort of trying to figure out, how do I even bring this subject up? Maybe you had a fight a few days ago and you figured out a way to resolve it, but now it's been a few days. So hopefully things have cooled off a little bit. You can maybe say to your partner, you know, we had that conversation, or just call it like it was. We had that fight a few days ago about this. What are some things that we can learn from that? How can we move forward from that, so we're not always fighting about this? Where do you think that came from? Help me understand what you were feeling in that moment, to kind of open the conversation that way. To go back to the Netflix thing, you could watch some Netflix shows like Marriage or Mortgage. I found was a fascinating one where they take a couple and the realtor shows them these beautiful houses that fit all of their criteria and, you know, stages a room to fit exactly what they're looking for. And then the wedding coordinator brings them to this gorgeous venue and shows them all these cool things like a donut wall. That one, it's like, well, I'm sold. I love the donut wall. That's amazing. Because they wanted a unique dessert option rather than cake. She's like, it was literally a wall with donuts hanging on pegs. So, and tries to sell them on that. And then, so the couple comes in with a set budget to either put a down payment on a house or get married. And so then at the end, the couple has to decide which one they want. That can be a great conversation starter. Be like, wow, if we were in that situation, or if we're talking about this kind of financial decision, how would we make that? What are your values on this? What are my values on this? What would be your priority? How would we make that sort of decision? And it wouldn't have to be marriage or mortgage, obviously. It could be any show where they're having some sort of discussion about money or finances. Use that as a stepping off point, which on the surface might be like, well, yeah, that never happens. But if you're looking for it, you can find a lot of opportunities to pull real life situations into your conversation.
I think that's wonderful. Hey, look, you know what? We're going to take a quick break. Everybody stick with us. We have more of Emily Blaine.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Steve Sexton. This is the Saving with Steve Show. We talk about the ins and outs of money. We have Emily Blaine talking us through that marriage conversation about money, how to start that conversation, how to deal with it. It's wonderful. I mean, if you're still fighting about money, this is a great segment to listen to. If you're just getting started with money, you're getting married, or just about, you've been married for a year or two or so, and you still haven't worked it out, you want to listen to this over and over again. So Emily, debt is a gigantic thing. Okay. There's a lot of people, especially when they get married older in life, some of them bring in debt, some of them do, some of them don't. So what's the best way to have that discussion about somebody's spending habits?
If it's specifically about spending habits, let's say you're the person who doesn't feel like they have a spending habit and you feel like your partner does. Not saying, I mean, maybe you do have a spending problem, but you mm-hmm. don't see it. But you're trying to approach your partner who you think has a bigger spending problem than you do. The biggest thing to keep in mind is, regardless of how you approach the conversation, they're probably going to be defensive. Mm-hmm. Because whenever you call somebody out about anything, they're pretty much going to be defensive. No matter how nice you are, no matter how carefully you think about your wording, the immediate reaction is going to be, they're attacking me for this. Mm-hmm. So going into the discussion, realizing that's the reaction you're going to get. And then I think coming at it from an approach of, what are our goals together? What are we trying to accomplish? And how is this helping or hurting those goals? Not just, you're spending too much money, because that's not going to get anywhere, because maybe they're spending $1,000 a month on fun stuff. Maybe they can afford that. You know, just because they're spending money doesn't necessarily mean it's a problem. Mm-hmm. If you're making $20,000 a month, spending $1,000 on fun stuff might be just fine. Mm-hmm. But it's when that starts impacting day-to-day life or future goals or that kind of thing that it becomes a real problem. You can try to approach that from, you know, we had talked about doing this for retirement or taking this big trip or whatever, saving for a house. You know, it feels to me like we're not able to make as much progress towards that goal as I thought we would like because of X, Y, and Z.
I see.
And then letting them talk.
So basically what you're saying is, hey, look, I'm a numbers person, so I do the spreadsheet stuff. So, you know, when you take a look at that, hey, I'm tracking everything, our expenses, we see they're up, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 a month, and you're doing A, B, and C with that. Now, if we continue to do that down the road, you know, me and my spreadsheet would say, hey, we're not going to be able to retire at this age if that's occurring. How is that going to help us? How can we change that? But basically having it with the goal in mind, as opposed to you're doing this.
Exactly. Yep. The one thing of what you said that stood out to me a little bit is you're doing A, B, and C, which can feel very attacking to the person being talked to.
Oh my God, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I mean, I do that all the time as well, that I have to be like, oh, well, I could have said that a little bit better. No wonder my husband reacted that way or my friend reacted that way. If that was, it was what I meant to say, but it came out a little bit harsher. But rather than you're doing this, saying, you know, the numbers I'm looking at are showing this, you know, if you can point it to the numbers show this, or the bank statement says this, or this is how much money, even say we, even if it was, you know, 95% your partner, but this is how much money we spent on X in the last month. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? Does that seem reasonable to you? My thoughts are we could maybe better use that to do X, so that we can achieve why, like we had talked about, or if you hadn't talked about it, that can also be another way to bring it up, to say, what do we want to accomplish in our lives with our money? What sort of retirement do we want to have? What sort of vacations do we want to go on? What kind of house or car do we want to buy? Whatever motivates you. And then say, okay, how can we achieve that? What has been happening that has been holding us back from meeting those goals? And how can we move forward?
You want to do that more politically, so you can say feelings, face, and not get punched in the eye over it. So
you have to be confrontational to a certain extent, but if you can keep it a little more low key, that tends to be better for the relationship in the long haul.
I'm totally with you. I'm totally with you. I love that you said that, because we've had these discussions in our household. 15 years ago, I went through a bout of cancer. You know what? Not working for a while, chemo and all that kind of stuff. But we had a conversation about everything that we're spending. When we started listing everything, my wife was going, oh, I didn't realize I was still paying for that. And the little apps and all that kind of stuff. And then we started looking at things going, do we really need that? And it made a big difference and enabled us to save a lot more than we realized. Oh my God, this is just growing really fast, because we are not spending as much as we used to. And the spending that we had really did nothing for us. I thought it was a really great point. Now, here's the other thing that's really big with couples. It's setting goals to help build a plan and get a financial direction for their life. How should people look at that Is that one of those things where you say, hey, this is the type of life we have. This is what I'd like to retire. This is what I'd like to retire on numbers wise. How do you go about doing that?
So when a couple works with me, we don't get into any of the investing things because I'm not a registered investment advisor. I don't have any of those certifications. So I stay away from that with a 10-foot pole because I can't handle that. So we talk more general about, you know, what are your goals? What are your lifestyle are you hoping to have? What is really important to you? Is it really important to go on a big, fancy, all-included resort vacation every year? Is it important to go on vacation, but you're totally fine with renting a campsite at a national park and road tripping there? Person B, same questions. What's important to you? Do you need a fancy car? Do you not care about a car? Do you want a big house? Do you not want a big house? What are sort of your needs? What are your goals? I would really love in 10 years to be in this location. Where are you at there? And then for investments and that kind of thing, I suggest reading books, going, talking to a financial advisor, that kind of thing. So if they can really get those numbers, but then really having that conversation about what do we want to accomplish in life? And where do we actually want our money to go? Is it important to us? You know, spending according to your values. Is it important to us to have the newest model of car? Or is that not important to us? If that's important to you, then figure out a way to make that work. If that's not important to you, then don't go buy a new car. Drive your car into the ground because you said that that's not something that you really care about.
What you're really saying is figure out the life you want to live and what that looks like, and then focus your financial plan on creating that life.
Exactly. Figure out what's important to you and what's not important to you, and then make sure you're spending the money on the important things rather than the not important things.
That makes it so much easier because now both of you are focused on your why, you're doing everything, and it makes it easier to make financial decisions on what's worthwhile, what's vital, what's not.
Exactly.
I think that's wonderful. And I think that's a wonderful lesson. And you know what the funny thing about it is it's awesome if you can learn that before you get married, when you're
exactly
engaged, or within a year or two. But I know there's people who are listening and they're going, yeah, I kind of wish we did that 25 years ago.
Right.
So, and I totally get that. And I think that's wonderful. Now, Emily, I know there's people, we have a lot of listeners, a lot of people are streaming, all that kind of stuff. What's the best way to get a hold of you if they need a financial coach for married life?
My website is dreambigfinancialcoaching.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Instagram with the same name of Dream Big Financial Coaching.
That's
so
wonderful.
That's the best way to get a hold of me. You can schedule a free meeting directly through my website for 15 minutes so we can chat about what I offer and what you're looking for and see if we're a good fit.
You do meetings through Zoom and things like that?
Correct. Yep. Everything I do is virtual. Even pre-COVID, it was virtual. So COVID has just made it that much easier.
You're going to get people all over the United States and might be around the world. So
help
with that.
Exactly.
Emily, I want to thank you so much for sharing your knowledge and your information, because these insights for some people listening might be simple and basic because they already do it right. But there's a lot of people who just don't know and need a foundation to do that. And they need somebody to help them. So I want to thank you. And I appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, you know what? Stay safe, stay healthy. And, you know, maybe we'll have you back sometime.
That'd be great. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye. Now, wasn't that wonderful? That was Emily Blaine talking about how to combine your finances, how to have those conversations. It was just wonderful. This segment is brought to you by Scoremaster.com. Did you know the average American has 97 points they could add to their credit score, but have no idea how to get them? The data scientists at Scoremaster cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approval, huge discounts, low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home, leasing a car, to even applying for a credit card. How fast is Scoremaster? One member raised their credit score 33 points in just 5 days. Another one 43 points in just 2 weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it just takes about a minute. And if you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right, Scoremaster for free. See how many plus points you can add to your credit score. So go to scoremaster.com/savings. Again, that's scoremaster.com/savings. That's scoremaster.com/savings. I want to thank you all for joining us today. We had Patrick Geddes, What a wonderful person there. His book's coming out in January called Transparent Investing. Gives you the things and the questions that you need to ask to make sure whoever advisor that you're working with has your best interest in heart. Secondly, Emily Blaine, for all of those who are married, about to get married, been married for a little bit, she gave the foundation for having the conversation with your spouse about money, finances, setting goals together so you can live your dreams. I want to thank you all for joining us. We're going to look forward to seeing you next week right here. Stay safe, stay healthy.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve show hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton.